Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
But the Mormons are consider themselves a Christian religion. But the characteristics that I would say make them unique is their intensive proselytizing. You've heard of Mormon missionaries going from house to house like Job. And they came to see if I was okay. And I basically said, I'm not a believer anymore. And which was shocking to them. And in that, we realized that underneath the semantics of our values, when we talked about what was important to us and what we believed and what was meaningful, we were more alike than we were different.
Hi, welcome to today's show. Today I have a guest with me. Her name is Lynn Smith. She is an adult estranged child, so it's going to be really cool to see her perspective and see what her journey's been like. I think you guys are going to enjoy it, so hold with me, and we'll bring Lynn on.
Hi.
Hi, Lynn.
Thanks so much, Donald, for having me.
You are welcome. I was happy when Corinne reached out to me. Because, you know, I don't get to talk to a lot. I've talked to a few, not a lot of the estranged adult children. So, and I know your story's got some complexity to it, which we'll talk about. But I was really glad to, you know, have this opportunity. So thank you. Let me ask, how long have you been estranged from your family?
Well, we have reconciled. That's something that is cool. Good to know. But I was 19 when I left the Mormon church. And because of that's a difficult step out of community, faith, culture. I was in Utah, which is predominantly Mormon. But when I discovered for myself that I didn't believe the Mormon church was true, that it was a fabrication, it was a double whammy for me because my maiden name is Smith, and I was related to Joseph Smith, the founder of the Mormon faith. And my family had four generations of unbroken devotion and reverence for my great-great-uncle and my great-great-grandfather, who was Joseph Smith's younger brother, and the first convert to the Mormon faith. So they were stunned, and it wasn't the typical story of the black sheep in the family who kind of acted out in teenage rebellion, who was going to eventually return to the fold, but just kind of wanted to sow their wild oats.
Right.
It was a decision that I made based on a lot of research. Not only into family journals and diaries that I had access to, but books that I had been forbidden to read as a Mormon because I was told that would impact my testimony of the gospel, the one true gospel. So,
right.
But
now,
these
for people who don't know, is there a Reader's Digest condensed version of how you would explain the Mormon faith?
The Mormon faith, was founded at a time of tremendous religious ferment in the Northeast in Palmyra, New York in 1838. And it was supposedly brought about when Joseph Smith, as a young man, went into the woods to pray, and Jesus and God appeared to him and said, "None of the existing churches are true, and I have plans for you." Mm. And then what the Mormons are famous for, Mormonism, is the Book of Mormon. And this is right. These are golden plates that Joseph Smith later on in his later on in life, in his early 20s, supposedly discovered. And they were supposedly the history of the Native American peoples, ancient civilizations, and he was able to transcribe them from their ancient language by the use of magic stones. Hmm. And I mean, when I say it now, it seems incredible to me that this was something that was as true as the sky is blue at one point in my life. But that brought about, and so it was absolutely a cult of a personality, and Joseph Smith ran with it and developed quite a following. But they were persecuted. Sometimes because he was quite a rascal in terms of his dealings, but they moved from place to place, and eventually he was martyred, the Mormons would say, but murdered by a mob who had found out that Joseph Smith and some of his main followers were practicing polygamy. Mm. And that after that, Brigham Young was the next prophet, and he's the one who led the Mormons out to Utah.
Oh, okay.
And polygamy existed until Utah, the territory of Utah, wanted to become a state, and they were not going to allow a state into the Union that was primarily practicing polygamy. Gotcha. So luckily, the Mormon prophet at the time said that I had had a revelation and that polygamy was to be abandoned for the time being.
Wow.
So, but the Mormons are considered themselves a Christian religion. But the characteristics that I would say make them unique is their intensive proselytizing. You've heard of Mormon missionaries going from mm-hmm. house to house, like Joe.
Oh, yeah, you see them. Yeah.
You see them. The young man mostly, but now women have started joining the ranks in more and more numbers because they believe that everyone on the earth needs to hear the word of the one true gospel, according to them, before the second coming.
Right.
And so they're trying to usher in the second coming. And they also have temples in which they have secret ceremonies and make covenants to God. And if you're not a Mormon, you're not allowed in the temple. And this is where people get married. And so I was not able to attend most of my brothers and sisters' marriages, their weddings, because as a non-Mormon at that point, I wasn't allowed in. You have to be a Mormon in good standing, i.e. pay 10% of your tithing.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Other than, but people, I don't think really understand just how large the Mormon church is. It's sure. the second fastest growing religion in the world, fastest growing Christian religion in the world. There's over 18 million members worldwide, and the second wealthiest.
Wow.
After the Catholic Church. And that surprises, I think, people because their reach extends far beyond just Utah.
Utah, right. So then when would you say that you're, and you may have said this already, but your questioning really started of that?
It really came about because a professor that I adored, I went to a non-Mormon university just temporarily before I was going to transfer to BYU, Brigham Young University. And I had an atheist professor challenge me about my faith and said, really, basically, I dare you to take my Bible as literature class. And I knew I was going to have to defend my faith, that I wanted to read everything that he would have read.
Right.
So within a week's time, I went from true believer and then one scholar, one historian after the next convinced me in the context of what happened to Joseph Smith and his family, I understood how this could all come together and be created. And I realized it was a fabrication. He was a fraud. So basically, at 19, I kept the information, the knowledge to myself. I was terrified to tell my family. I didn't know what it would mean. The church was just integral to all family celebrations. There were baptisms, weddings, funerals. Everything was church-based.
Right.
Mormons are almost uniquely involved in the church. There's usually an activity at the church every single night. So it was so integrated as part of the family as well as the culture, I just couldn't see how I could break that information to them. But eventually, when I stopped going to church, the church came looking for me, and they knew who I was, and they actually have people who come and check on you if you don't go to church, called your visiting teachers, and they came to see if I was okay, and I basically said, I'm not a believer anymore, and which was shocking to them, and I knew the word was going to get back to my family, and so that gave me the impetus to finally confess, which, you know, basically broke my mother's heart and stunned my father.
Sure. Especially with your family lineage, you know, they, right. I'm sure they thought, you can't do this to us.
I was also sort of the golden child in my family, held up as an example. This is what happens. Oh, you're very successful when you follow God's commandments. And I was the last person, I would say, in the family that they expected to stray. So I didn't go home for the summer. I didn't really know how to handle being around my family, but, so we were really quite distant. And then, when I finished college, I moved 2,000 miles away to New York City for graduate school and never really returned.
Yeah.
I didn't see a place for myself within my family, and I didn't see a place for myself in Utah, in the culture, particularly the way they handle women.
Right. That had to be, I mean, I know us as parents think that, you know, the kids just make this really easy decision to break apart and destroy the family. But clearly that's not an easy thing. And if you were the, as you said it, the golden child, then that's even more responsibility you must have felt.
Yes, and what hurt the most was them misunderstanding my reasons for leaving. And part of it, I understand, is just the framework, the structure that they were dealing with in terms of, you know, either I'd been led astray by Satan or I didn't want to live up to the difficult ideals and rules and practices of the Mormon Church. But in fact, it hurt to lose that faith, to lose that certainty. This was a place that had all the answers. And suddenly I decided, as only a 19-year-old can do, that if the Mormon Church was a fraud, probably this whole idea about God was a myth too, and became an atheist overnight. Wow. Which, you know, at the time seemed like the only possible decision. I think part of that is because of the kind of black and white thinking or the lack of critical thinking that happens in a high control religion where you defer your judgment of a situation to a higher authority. And so I didn't have a lot of experience dealing with matters of gray, and I was young. But what hurt was the instantaneous lack of respect from my brothers and sisters, and the disappointment of my parents in me. And yet, on my side, I was thinking, this is one of the most courageous things I've ever had to do. And to have it misunderstood was hurt.
Of course.
And so there wasn't the internet, so I didn't have places to go to find like-minded people and muddle through it basically myself. But so I stayed in New York City and met my husband, had my two children, and the family, you know, sort of, I mean, I would maybe come home for Christmas before I got married and had my own family, but it was a very, felt very contrived. I was kept at arm's length. As a nephew, one of my brother's children said to me, "Yeah, we basically shunned you guys." And I felt it, even though, you know, nobody point blank ignored me. Right. I didn't belong. That was obvious, and I didn't have a role to play there.
And I would imagine in their view, they were kind of in the middle too, you know, that they, you know, they still believed certain things. Some of them did, I'm sure. And, you know, trying to navigate that. So that had to be difficult on them as well.
Right. And there was almost a sense that they could get contaminated, you know, associating with me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was painful for everybody. I mean, my parents' disappointment. And I mean, in their view, I was making eternal decisions that, you know, were going to last way beyond my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And be cast into purgatory. So I can imagine how painful it was for them to think about. But it left no room for a dialogue. There wasn't any way, it seemed to me, to nobody asked me questions like what made you decide to leave?
Right, because it didn't matter. No answer probably
would have sufficed.
Right.
But I've heard that thread now in talking to other people who have left the Mormon Church or other high control religions. And I think that's one of the more painful things is that nobody's curious.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to have an open mind and sit down and just talk about what happened. What was your experience? What did you see, feel, think that made you decide you needed to leave?
Right.
And so I think that hampers any attempt at reconciliation. Fortunately or unfortunately for us, we had a family crisis. And I talk about it in my memoir, which is now being shopped to publishers. It's called We Were Smiths, Escaping the Shadow of Joseph Smith's Mormon Legacy. And I talk about the fact that this crisis led to us deciding as a family that we had to do something radical. Right. And that meant family therapy.
Now with your parents and siblings?
And all the siblings.
Talking about?
Yeah. Okay. And because we were geographically dispersed at this point, everybody out west, me in the east, it was only once a year, but we decided to try to gather as a family once a year for 3 or 4 days. And one day would be with a family therapist facilitating discussions. And I realized that I'm an anomaly, that the family, that the family members all chose to participate, and that my parents chose to participate. And that it wasn't focused on, it wasn't faith-based. You know, it was just a professional therapist, family therapist. And in that, we realized that underneath the semantics of our values, when we talked about what was important to us and what we believed and what was meaningful, we were more alike than we were different.
And is that what helped you guys to, you know, finally come back together?
That and learning how to, we realized we really can't discuss religion. There isn't a middle ground when you have a faith that is absolute, the way the Mormon Church is. They believe it's the one true. So it doesn't allow for a lot of other spiritual paths, but we learned to be respectful. Years and years later, some of my other brothers and sisters left the church.
Yeah.
But not for quite some time. And so I felt a little less alone at that point. The things that helped was learning how to be respectful about our questions and our language, and not be critical, and certainly not try to convince anyone of our position. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't dialogue about, you know, what do you believe in? Which one's better? Anything like that. At that point, I wasn't an atheist anymore. I'd had enough experience with the world to understand that that was a pretty limited position for me to have and close the door on mystery and wonder and awe.
You know, now I'm kind of curious, you know, you talking about the family therapy, that did the church have any, like, misgivings? Do they have anything against doing something like that? Obviously, with someone who doesn't believe anymore, I know they wouldn't like that. But just in general?
Well, the church refers people who come to them for help often to the bishop, which is like the pastor. Okay. And he is in a position of counseling them. But if the situation is too difficult or complicated or acute, he may refer them to a list of Mormon-approved therapists. Gotcha. So that wasn't the route that we went, luckily, because I don't think we would have been... Anybody who wasn't a Mormon would have been comfortable in that church-based, faith-based counseling situation.
Right.
And it's unfortunate that that sometimes that is where people go for support because it's very insular.
Right.
It doesn't provide a lot of open-mindedness since there's an implicit agreement that whatever you're deciding or discovering or finding out still needs to be within the structure of maintaining a belief in the church.
Sure. Now, since you've been doing writing your memoir and that kind of thing, have you had the opportunity to talk to other, either parents or of your adult children that have estranged?
Yeah.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
I did, in fact, both of my parents in the last 2 years have passed on, and I kind of waited until that before I sought publication of the book. They were 89 and 92. And I sent the book to my brothers and sisters, all of them, very nervously.
I'll bet. And,
also said, if you don't want to follow me on social media anymore, I understand, and I won't take it personally if you block me. And this is what I mean about kind of respect. I understand this might be offensive to you.
Right.
And I even told them, if you don't want to read the chapters where I discover that the Mormon Church is a fraud, I didn't put it that way. I said, if you don't want to read the chapters in the book where I'm talking about my discovery that led me to leave, you can skip them. They're chapters X, Y, and Z, So
there you go.
I don't know whether they did or not, and the Mormons almost unanimously asked me to change their names.
Yeah.
And I respect that, and I'll do that. Yeah. I was afraid that this fragile reconnection that is still feels sometimes tenuous and sometimes will have little things flare up or whatever. We usually can get around them, resolve them. But I thought, man, this may be a deal breaker.
I think a lot of us parents feel that way a lot of the time, too. Like I think I mentioned before, my son and I are reconciled and we're in a really good place. But you still feel that if I say this, is that going to set it off? And I know other parents have told me the same thing who have either reconnected or limitedly reconnected or whatever. So I know that's, you know, right. We're all human. We all have very similar feelings on one side or the other. So if more of us could, you know, like you said, what did you say earlier? Not to, when you guys were going through counseling, to agree not to
discuss.
To be able to discuss it and not watch your language. That's one of the good things I liked you said, because it's all in how you say it sometimes. You know,
it truly is. And becoming more skillful communicators, realizing that some words are triggers.
Right.
And we really kept in mind, our motto was, you know what? We are more alike than we are different. So let's focus on the common ground. And we really have. We talk about our kids. Some of us are having grandkids now.
Yeah.
We find the places where we connect, that we have things in common. And I think it just makes sense. Yeah. And we don't discuss religion or politics, for that matter. Because as we know, this nation is dealing with an incredible polarization that has left family members estranged for political reasons.
Yeah. And no matter which three sides of the aisle you might be on, you know, it's the same way. But like you said, if you could, if even in those situations, if people could focus on the things we have in common, we all want to live. You know, we all want to have a, you know, a fairly peaceful existence, you know, and I'm sure there's a lot of other things. If we could focus on that,
right,
it'd be a whole lot better place. So,
and we're pretty out loud about the love we have for each other. We're basically always saying, I love you. I may not understand your position on this, but I want you to know I love you and I respect your right to have it.
Yeah.
And that's almost necessary. I mean, we were talking a little earlier about situations where, you know, reconciliation is not an option.
Right.
And I think those are situations where the dialogue is toxic and hurtful, and people are in fight or flight mode or protection mode, you know. And finding a way to communicate. And I think for me, getting individual therapy after leaving the church to get some support, because it was tremendously difficult to integrate a new idea of myself.
I'll bet.
Separate from who I was as the special chosen daughter of a, with bloodline connection to Joseph Smith. It was like suddenly, well, who am I then?
Right.
And so I think getting support individually and then also support from a community who have suggestions for you for things that were helpful for them, you know, and just not feeling so alone is a really good tool to have in your kit when you're trying to deal with the loss and the pain of estrangement.
I think that's the common thread for both sides of this dilemma, is that feeling like you're alone or you're the only one going through this. Because every single person that I talked to, when it first started happening to them on, you know, either side, I feel like I'm the only one going through this. And once you realize you're not, that at least pulls some weight off of the, you know, how you're feeling about yourself. So that's huge. How, you know, so you're good with your family now, as long as you guys stay away from certain things.
Right.
Do you still have touch with family friends from that time? And how does that?
No, you know, that, you know, that's the secondary wave of loss is all the friends that, you know, no longer want to associate with you. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't retain any of my Mormon childhood friends. Okay. None. But it's interesting, in my family, at least, some of my very active, very committed and involved Mormon family members have had some of their children leave the church. And that has opened the door to a level of dialogue that I don't think they were even curious about before.
Right.
But now that it's happening to them, they are much more interested in understanding, you know, how do we retain being a family?
Right.
With this kind of religious schism. And several have reached out to me to say, you know, my son's just announced that he doesn't believe in the church anymore. And to their credit, they've said, instead of shunning him, or, I mean, despite their initial reactions, which is shock and often anger and confusion and blame, once they get past that, you know, they're like, how do I make him feel like he's part of the family? And that warms my heart to know that they want to make sure that their child feels part of, because that didn't happen for me.
Right. And I was going to say, in a sense, I would imagine that you, along with, I'm sure there's other people that they know of that have gone through that, helped them to maybe prepare for that and know better. Maybe not the first reaction was good, but at least they came around and, you know, were open to discuss. So you had sort of a hand in that, I would imagine. So that's
good. I was gratified to be asked for advice.
Yeah.
You know, they were like, well, you know, how did you feel and what would have helped?
Yeah. And that's what this is all about. You know, you're my doing what I do and you writing your memoir, and hopefully that book, you know, it gets published and stuff. That's what that's all about. So that, you know, you went through a horrible time trying to prevent other people, or as many people as you can, going through that same thing. So,
And so I think it offers hope that there is a path, even when the belief systems are very far apart. There, it is possible sometimes to redefine what it means, in our case, to be a Smith, you know, what it means. And it's a new definition of a family, one that's a bigger umbrella so that we can all fit underneath it and not have just this limited label. And for a long time, I felt, you know, they just defined the family as Mormons and Lynn, you know.
Right. Now, it's interesting that you mentioned that about how the Smiths are. Did you ever think about, from the time you left to now, I suppose, to drop the Smith? Was that ever something you considered?
Well, and I did, really, okay. When I got married. I was okay. eager to abandon my surname, you okay. know. But I feel differently now as I've gotten yeah. older. And especially writing this book, it's important for me to identify as a Smith. But it's also because I finally feel like I belong in my family again.
Yeah. I imagine that would have been different had you completely still been shunned and not had
exactly, your exactly. And yeah. so that's a testament to the healing that's taken place.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. I think it, like you said earlier, I think it gives hope to people. You know, not everybody's going to be able to reconcile. Not everyone is going to be able to talk right. about some things and not other things. But if you can do that, it'll get you a little closer, I think. You know, everybody has right. pride and they want to, you know, I'm right, you're wrong, you know, but what's more important, you know?
Yeah, as they say, would you rather be right or happy? And we've yeah. all chosen happy.
Yeah. And, you know, and there's obviously there's instances where, you know, it uh-huh. can't be the same, you know, not can't fit every, what do they say? You can't fit a round peg in a square hole, you know, right. so sometimes it just won't work, but.
Yeah. And sometimes it feels a little more fragile than at other times, you know, sure. just, but we learn some communication skills and we don't have to say everything we're thinking, you know, different techniques,
right.
In our toolkit now that help us navigate being together. And we have a family reunion, you know, every year. So,
awesome.
Yeah, it is. And it's something that, and I'm closer with certain family members than others, sure. just the way Me it too. Normally is in yeah. every family. You just gravitate to people who have more similar experiences or similar lives, but we can all hang out for 3 or 4 days without disruption.
Yeah.
Without drama.
That's awesome. I mean, yeah, drama in this world, if you could take a little time with little drama, and I'm sure there's times when on your side and their side, when you're together and someone might say some word, and it probably takes you to step back for a second and say, okay, you know, just breathe for a second, let it go. And, you know, let's move uh-huh. on. So,
right.
but you have those tools, which is great. You know, I know a lot of people question therapy. I question some therapists.
Yeah.
I don't question therapy so much because I think it's important, but
No, I agree. It's essential to find someone that can really understand what your goals are
right.
With the therapeutic experience, and you feel that fit or that click that, you know, they have something meaningful that's going to be helpful to impart.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. So that you have quite a story. You know, I'm glad that you and your family and your parents were able to
yes
be in a good place before they left. So I'm sure they were happy about that too.
They were, because, you know, for the years where we were estranged, that was really hard on them.
It was. I mean, it is. I mean, I'm not speaking yeah. to them, obviously, but it is. And like I said, I'm learning through this that it's, you know, sometimes the parents are completely off. Sometimes the kids are completely off. But sometimes it's just that a little misunderstanding that turned into something way more, you know,
something global. Yeah. Global warfare. Yeah.
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 Obviously yours was a little more, more intense just because of the nature of the religious aspect of it, which a lot of people go through. So it's very difficult to navigate that, but
yeah, it's a major reason for estrangement. And some of the things that go with that, you know, any high control conservative fundamentalist type religion that has strong feelings about homosexuality or transgender or women's roles and stuff, you know, there's a lot of opportunities to get nuclear. So avoiding that. And it's been interesting in our family that as one of my family members had a son who came out as gay, and they were all staunch Mormons, and that rocked their world. Yeah.
I'll bet.
But luckily, they absolutely adored this kid because he was a fabulous person. And they decided to embrace their child rather than their religion's position on who he was and what his value was.
Right. And, you know, it doesn't mean that I know in some cases it you kind of have to make a choice, but doesn't necessarily mean you can't love your kid or your parent because of whatever, you know, you just have to do like you guys did, you know, agree to disagree kind of, and not talk about it. So,
focus in some places on where you connect.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we were surprised to find that our values were so similar. We were surprised to find that we were more alike than we were different.
Because they thought you threw everything out. Well, I mean, I guess at first you did, you know, but.
But even when I was an atheist, I didn't throw out being a good person, being honest. And, but there was the assumption that somehow I had. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So getting past assumptions and understanding who that person is that's in front of you talking, and what's important to them. I think as humans, we would all find that we are more alike than we are different.
I agree.
We all want to feel worthy of love and have a sense of belonging. And that has been the biggest gift in the reconciliation is feeling like I belong in my family again.
So I guess all in all, painful as it was on both sides, you feel, I would assume you could correct me, but you feel pretty good that you made the right decision, obviously.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And I feel like the definition of us as a family is a better definition. It's not one, it's not focused on being perfect. It's just a much more giving, tolerant, respectful group now. Yeah. So it's improved the family.
Well, a lot of parents and a lot of kids, I would imagine, call you kids, you know, because you're somebody's kid. But a lot of parents, a lot of kids do write books or start things like I did, you know, kind of thing. How did that, how was that process? Was that freeing for you? Can you explain how that was for you? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Yes, I think it was cathartic. I wanted to better understand myself and my family. And I was curious what I would discover. I kept a journal almost my whole life. And going back, I found myself wanting to know, was my experience unique? You know, did my brothers and sisters feel somewhat the same? And so it was cathartic, and it was, the excavation was at times painful, but it was really important to me to come up with some answers for myself. And then, you know, I wanted to share it because I feel like there are things that can be done that can ease some of the pain and heartbreak. They're not necessarily inevitable. Right. We can do a better job. And if we know how to, then we can choose to do it, or at least try.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to be any worse off if you don't, if you put out that olive branch and, you know, attempt to, you know, either make some changes in yourself or realize, you know, whatever. So, so that's really awesome. Well, it's been really fascinating talking to you. I appreciate you coming on. I think it's a little more unique perspective than I've talked to before. There's been other people that talked about the little bit of the religion aspect and how that affected them, but yours went a bit deeper. And of course, with your family history, you know, that's even more. So I really, really appreciate it. So I enjoyed it.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. And I love what you're doing. It's good work.
Thank you. Thank you. And so if people wanted to read your blog or your memoir and learn more about you, where would they go?
Well, my website will keep people up to date. You can follow me on social media as Lynn Smith Gregory. I'm both Facebook and Instagram, but my website is lynnsmithgregory.com, and that has all my blog posts. I'm also on Medium and Substack, but my website will have all the information, as well as what's happening with the publication of my book, what where I'm at in the process. It's it's out to different publishing houses, and we've heard back from some saying they're interested, and they're currently reading the whole book.
Awesome.
So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that
I will keep them crossed for you. So as
thank
well.
Thank you.
That'd be awesome. Well, I will make sure that your website is linked in the description below. So if
thank
anybody
you.
Wants to learn more about Lynn and keep up with the progress and you know, hopefully read the book, the whole book once it's out. Fingers crossed, that'll be the place to go. So
thank you, Don. I appreciate that.
You are very welcome. So guys, again, if you want to contact Lynn, her website is in the description. And if you also know anybody, or you yourself being an estranged child or the parent want to discuss it, you can either email me your story and I will read that to people. I just started doing that recently, or let me know. We can do, have you on the show as well. So,
that's great.
Yeah. The more people talking about it,
absolutely.
We can just help more people on both sides of the, on both sides of the issue, then we can hopefully
either
save
camp,
some people.
It's very helpful.
Exactly. So,
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.